Good afternoon. Live from Aspen Public Radio, I'm Allison Bechtesh. This is Valley Roundup. The Aspen School Board District of the Aspen School District Board of Education gets a new member. Tax questions supporting Colorado Mountain College and Garfield County Historical Societies are shot down by voters, but tax on tobacco and pot to help fund public health initiatives both pass. Outside the polls this week, the Grand Avenue Bridge is back open. Housing continues to be a hot topic in the community, of course, and the Glenwood Springs Art Center is rebooting. All that and more coming up on Valley Roundup. Joining me again live today in the studio are David Krause, editor of the Aspen Times. Hi, David.
Hello. How are you today?
I'm great. I'm really actually just so excited. Anything can happen. We're on live radio. Brent Garner-Smith is also here in the studio, editor and executive director of Aspen Journalism. Brent, thank you so much for coming in.
You bet. Pleasure to be here.
And on the phone with us from Glenwood Springs is Carla Jean Whitley from the Glenwood Post-Independent. She's a feature editor. Glenwood Springs Post-Independent. She's the features editor there. Carla, how are you doing? Carla Jean?
Doing fine, thanks. How are you?
Good. Thank you again all so much for joining me. Of course, it was election week, so that's going to be the main topic of conversation on Valley Roundup. But stuff's always going on throughout the Valley, so we'll touch on a lot more as well. David, let's start with you.
Sure.
I kind of want some gooey insight to election night in the newsroom. What was going on there, and what did you and your team have your eye on?
Well, you know, I think school board is always, in any community, a school board is always the most interesting election in an off-election year. And it's nice when you have a choice. You know, a lot of communities struggle to get that many seats filled, and, you know, people are just put in. So to have five people who are all invested and involved in the district and wanted to be a part of it for the three seats, I thought was interesting. You know, newsrooms on election night, you probably know it's hurry up and wait. you're kind of sitting around at 7 and you know you're going to get your first dump of numbers within then. And, you know, the clerk, we're in contact with the clerk, and I think they sent 4 updates through the night. So that's always a lot of fun. Seeing Susan Zimmett on the board, you know, a lot of people were either impressed or put off by the way she was looking at numbers differently and data and all that. And having talked to her one-on-one, we met with all the candidates for the school board race. And you know, meeting with her one-on-one, you can see that the passion that she has in her work and raising her kids here is also going to overflow into the way she looks at data. And, you know, data's not everything. Numbers can be skewed, as we know, any different way. But to have somebody who really likes to break that information down and present it in different ways, I think is going to be good for the board.
You know, it's kind of set up as these challengers versus incumbents. And Susie Zimmett and Jonathan Nickel are both coming from that same board, the District Accountability Committee, that was showing those numbers. And yet only she was voted on, and then 2 other incumbents held strong.
Right. And I think, you know, for Jonathan's sake, he's just new in the area and people don't know him. But I think this is a measure where he seems like a person who's committed to helping education. He was on a school board where he lived previously. He likes to look at that kind of stuff. He's got children as well. And so I think he's a person who you're going to see around in the education circle for a while. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he runs for board, you know, 2 or 3 more times, because sometimes that's what you need to do is get your name out there first and then, you know, let people know what you're standing for.
Certainly. We'll come back to a couple more up valley issues in a moment. CJ, what at the Glenwood Springs Post-Independent, what did you guys have your eyes on? Were there any highlight races there?
Well, there was only one race on our ballot that pitted 2 people against one another.
Okay.
And that was for CMC board seats. It was Peg Portscheller, probably butchering her name, and if so, I'm sorry, Peg, and Randy Winkler, who is a former mayor of Rifle, in that seat, and Portscheller took that one.
Was she the incumbent there?
I do believe she's the incumbent.
Okay. Yeah. And then
No, I don't think she was, actually. I'm sorry, I didn't report that, so I'm like fact-checking myself as I speak. I don't believe there was an incumbent in that race.
Okay.
But yeah, she does have a long history of working in education, 47 years of experience. And she was a superintendent of schools in Lake County and a school administrator in Eagle County.
Okay.
She now is based in Battle Bend Mesa. So she had a lot of experience in education. And, of course, her opponent did not have the education background that she did. And in her sort of victory speech, she did speak very well of him and referenced that, in her opinion, it was a win-win, no matter who won the race, that CMC would be well cared for in that position.
Wonderful. So, what about ballot measures? Anything that caught your news team by surprise?
I don't know about surprise necessarily, but there were definitely...
Sorry, Carla, we're having a little bit of problems. You try again. I think you're fine now.
All right. Beauty of live radio, right?
Yeah.
Okay, if I hold very still, anyhow, certainly one of the ballot measures that we were watching was related to the potential tax for the historical societies. This would have benefited 7 Garfield County historical societies spread out from Battle Bend Mesa up to Carbondale, and those societies are all in different states of operation. Some are really opening their facilities on a by appointment basis. Others are really thriving. In any case, that measure did fail. And so it'll be interesting to see what's ahead for those historical societies, some of whom have indicated that without the money that would have come as a result of that ballot measure, they may be no more. So we'll certainly be keeping an eye on what the future of that looks like.
Bryn, I want to turn to you. There was a measure on the ballot just for City of Aspen voters, and I almost want to call it like a water measure, but it really wasn't. It wasn't asking about water, but it's tied into what really started with reporting that you did about the city's water rights. And as you kept on the city about why they might be holding damming rights, and community members were made aware of this, I think the council, this iteration, the council felt compelled to find another place besides these pristine creeks we have in the Castle and Maroon Valleys to transfer those. So they said maybe this plot of land, and maybe we can get a good voter-approved loan for that land, essentially. The voter said, no, we don't want you to do that.
And it's not really clear what a no vote means other than we don't want you to issue general obligation bonds to buy this property. But it doesn't necessarily mean that we don't want you to buy the property, and it doesn't necessarily mean that we don't want you to move the water rights out of Castle and Maroon, and it doesn't necessarily mean that we don't want you to build water storage in Woody Creek. So it's difficult to discern the true intent of the voters, other than clearly the city can't issue general obligation bonds to buy this property. The city kind of put this measure on the ballot and then, in a sense, sort of left it by the curb to fend for itself. There wasn't any really discussion about it or support from citizens or elected officials. And they didn't clearly tie it to, if you buy this property, we will definitively walk away from Castle and Maroon. In fact, they said also, they sent a signal that I thought was curious as a voter. I don't vote in the city of Aspen, but I think any voter might, where they said, we're going to buy this land either way. Mm-hmm. We're asking you whether we should issue general obligation bonds for it. If you say no, we're still going to buy it. We're going to just do either pay cash for it or issue what are called certificates of participation. So I don't know if some voters interpret that and said, well, okay, if my vote doesn't really matter to you, then no.
Right.
Right.
So it's unclear really what it means. And I don't think there's been any city response to the question going down. I haven't talked to any city officials about it yet.
No, I haven't seen any. And I think you're right. It's hard to tell if it was, you know, we don't want to spend $5.5 million for $3 million
right,
if we can just take it out of general cash.
So, on the flip side of that, if it had passed.
Yeah, let's reverse engineer
this. If it had passed, I think it would be fairly easy for an elected official in Aspen to say, well, we just got a series of green lights. We can clearly buy the property with general obligation bonds. Apparently, you want us to buy the property since you gave us the go-ahead to do that. You apparently want us to move the rights out of Castle and Maroon, and you want us to build water reservoirs in Woody Creek. So all those green lights might have been stacked up. Now you've got one red and maybe a couple of yellows, and so it's just difficult to know what the voters' intent was. It was a pretty close vote. It was 770 people said yes and 881 people said no. And so I'd certainly love to talk to the 770 people who said yes. What were they? What did you think you were accomplishing with this, and why? And also talk to the no voters. So I guess it remains to be seen what happens to both the land in Woody Creek and the water rights in Castle and Maroon.
All right, you're listening live to Valley Roundup, feedback and all, here from Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bechtesh. Putting things in perspective for us today are David Krause, who's the editor of the Aspen Times, Brent Garner-Smith, he's the editor and executive director of Aspen Journalism, and CJ Whitley, she's the features editor with the Glenwood Post Springs. Glenwood Springs Post Independent. We'll be right back. Thanks so much for tuning in live to Valley Roundup here on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bechtesh. Breaking down our election week that we just had, I'm really interested in some of the endorsements that the press around the Valley decided to come out with. First of all, the Aspen Times, they said three specific candidates that they wanted for that school, or that they thought were the best for the future of the Aspen School District.
Sure. Yeah. You know, we have an editorial board. We have conversations. Like I said in the earlier segment, we met with all five of the candidates and just looked at the way, you know, our approach on these. It's not so much personal, but about the issue around and what's going on with the school board and the push to try to keep a united front and, you know, that whole us against them. You know, we kind of took a look at that and how the district was presenting the incumbents and should they have been using, you know, different mediums to do that.
Twitter right profiles and, yeah.
Right before all that stuff. So, you know, that was a question we had. Rick Carroll does all of our education coverage right now and goes to the school board meetings and knows the players and the people. And we talk to teachers and administrators as well. So, you know, those are the harder ones to do because,
it
like I said
personal.
Earlier, you know, you have five people who are all invested and who want to help the district. And so, that's a good problem to have. The other one we did was, of course, the cigarette tax,
sure.
Which I think is an easy one for a healthy community like this. Anybody who's been touched by, the ills of smoking and what that can do certainly thinks about it. I think cost is a deterrent. You know, I had some readers after we published that one saying that we were hypocritical because, you know, we run pot ads and, you know, all that. But then we're saying that, you know, we hope that a price increase will be a deterrent for people. But I think when you go into the Shell station and people are dropping down a 10 and that's not enough, or, you know, if it's, you know, younger kids even, I think that's a good correlation. And to have that go into effect on the same day as the increase in the age to purchase, I think is just a good smart move for Aspen in whole. And, you know, it's something that the rest of the state and talking to tobacco-free people, you know, it's something for the rest of the state that they can look at and say, okay, maybe we can do it this way. And it, giving up that $75,000 in tax revenue from the state is okay because we're going to get $325 back or whatever the cap's going to be with this tax and be able to have educational programs. I think people will see into that.
So two of your three candidates and the tobacco tax all did pass. Did you sway voter opinion?
You know, I don't know how that, you know, it's hard to say. I think, you know, in a tax thing, I don't think so. You know, I think that was pretty well, people pretty much had it in their mind. But it's always good to have your voice out there on that. You know, school board, who knows? You know, people pay attention to that. We ran profiles of each. You know, we did a whole week series like we did with city council and asked them all the same question. And so we tried to get the information out there. And I think that helps more than anything.
Did you take a position on the Woody Creek land purchase?
We didn't. because it was so involved in, like you and I have talked previously, the city's going to do it one way or another. Mm. So is it worth getting that deep into the minutia of, you know, like we said, pay 5.5 for $3 million or just take it out of general fund?
Brent, would you have endorsed that one way or the other?
I don't know, because I would have required, I think, a lot more discussion with city officials. And I guess that's my bent. I would have wanted to know a lot more about the larger situation than we were really able to get. I thought it was the kind of question, it got very little coverage in terms of articles or letters to the editor, or there wasn't a forum on it. So I just needed a lot more information before I could make a recommendation. And also, as a nonprofit news organization, we don't do what the papers do. We don't take stances.
But have you seen the political, or sorry, the public feeling towards these water rights issues change? I mean, I really see you as the forefront of this coverage, and is this different from the public perception when your articles first came out, or this no vote? Do you think the public is staying on a steady line about how they feel about the council taking this into consideration?
Well, I appreciate your suggestion that we've been leading the reporting. We have been on the story since 2012, but we've been working in collaboration with both the Aspen Times and the Aspen Daily News at different times. And I've been glad to see Aspen Public Radio covering the issue as well. It's difficult for me to discern how the public really feels, frankly. The council has clearly gotten some message because it's decided to try and move the water rights out of Castle and Maroon. But there hasn't been a great deal of public debate on it. The meetings where the topic comes up have not really been well attended by members of the public. This does not seem to be a classic issue where you can sort of judge by how many people are bearing torches and pitchforks in city council chambers to see how the public feels. It's been relatively quiet out there, but the council seems to have definitively is probably not the right word. but the council, ever since telling the state, hey, we still want to keep these water rights, has also been publicly saying, hey, we really want to find an alternative to these water rights. And so that's what I think is difficult for a lot of people to fully grasp. But, well, which canoe are you going to stand in eventually? Which is it? Because right now they're still on record with the state saying, hey, we want to keep these water rights.
Right.
And yet they've told the public, hey, we're working to transfer them.
Thanks, Brent. So, CJ, the Glenwood Springs Post-Independent also had at least an endorsement for that that historical society tax. Clearly, that didn't sway it to passing.
Actually, the editorial was against the tax.
Oh, tell me about that.
So, my boss Randy Essex wrote the editorial arguing that we needed more clarification in how what the tax would be used, how those monies would be divided, and what the purpose of those monies would be. And one of the reasons he cited was the somewhat recent purchase of a Derringer once thought to belong to Doc Holliday. Since the $84,000 purchase, the provenance of the gun has been called into question, and it most likely did not belong to Doc Holliday. And so that was one example he cited of why we should have more information before voting to approve a tax.
So that's an impressive power of the press throughout a lot of the, you know, if you line up endorsements and line up results, there's a pretty distinct line there.
I think so. You know, I think the one that didn't pass that we were in favor of, and we did it jointly with the Glenwood Springs paper, is the CMC revenue measure. And I was surprised it passed in Pitkin and I believe Pitkin and Rout counties is where it passed,
yeah,
and then it didn't.
Right.
It failed in the other areas. So I thought that was kind of an interesting one. And I was looking on the Secretary of State's website on Wednesday of all the education measures around the state for, you know, school districts as well, and 7 of the 13 failed.
Wow.
So it again is that example of education. People still struggle to say when there's an education, you know, tax out there that, you know, it's for the greater good.
I think it's an uphill sell for CMC in a sense that when you look at your property tax bill, if you are a property tax owner, CMC is right at the top of where your taxes are going. And so I think people may have felt, hey, you're already getting enough of my money. Ironically, though, that's what that wasn't what the question was really asking. It's
right.
can we keep the taxes you're already giving us?
And right, so, and get away from the convoluted Gallagher Amendment.
And I've been here since 1982, and I'm not entirely sure I could explain the Gallagher Amendment to you. So the casual voter who's never tried probably didn't get the message.
Yeah, between Gallagher and Tabor,
right.
yeah. it's still a head-spinning issue yeah. for people. But I thought that one, I really thought that would be one that would have passed.
Carla Jean, did you hear from readers about what they thought about that CMC? Were you and the news team surprised about that outcome?
You know what? We definitely heard a lot of support for it in advance. And with it, I mean, with taxes, it is always interesting to see which ways people go. I don't know if surprised is the word that I would go with, but I wouldn't have. I certainly would not have been surprised had it passed.
Right. And it does seem like this false equivalent that perhaps it's not saying we don't support our public education institution here in the Valley more than we just don't want them to have that unlimited ability to keep this tax without asking me every time they want to do it.
It could be that people fully understand the Gallagher Amendment.
yeah.
And if that's the case, I'd like them to come explain it to me.
Right.
To your point, these things are really convoluted and not always easy to understand. And that does make sitting down with your ballot at times intimidating.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to move on from elections in just a moment after this break. Thanks so much. You're listening to Valley Roundup live on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bechtesh. My guests today are David Krause, who is the editor of the Aspen Times. Brent Garner-Smith is also joining us live in the studio, editor and executive director of Aspen Journalism. And on the phone from Glenwood Springs is Carla Jean Whitley. She's the features editor at the Glenwood Springs Post-Independent. Guys, thank you all so much for being part of our maiden live Valley Roundup. It's really, really fun.
I do enjoy live radio.
It is.
Carla, do we still have you there?
Yeah, my only regret is that I'm not there in the room with y'all.
We feel the same way.
Maybe next time.
Let's move on to the only other thing that could surpass election news, and that is that the Glenwood Avenue Bridge opened this week. Carla Jean, what does it feel like in Glenwood Springs? Is that still the talk of the town?
It is, and I mean, at this point, we've been talking about the bridge so long that we're going to have to find new things to talk about. You know, I had friends and family visit during the detour, and they were just amazed by how much people talked about the Grand Avenue Bridge and how much people lined up on the pedestrian bridge to watch the concrete pours. They were genuinely confused, but it has felt a bit celebratory down here. The march over the bridge right before it opened was an exciting gathering. And, you know, there were about 3,000 people walking
over. Oh, my gosh.
I know. The photos are fantastic. And then as they opened the bridge to traffic, people were honking and cheering. I mean, I, at that point, was several blocks away, and I could hear the honking. A friend later compared it to on Gilmore Girls, when the town of Stars Hollow got a stoplight, and I laughed really hard, except I would argue that our bridge was much more valuable than that fictional stoplight.
Carla, you know, I'm wondering about some of the impacts of that detour and that closure. I remember really early on there was this push from local businesses that were right at the hub there saying, please don't avoid us. We still need your business. Do you have numbers on, like, was that a hit? Did people keep coming?
So I don't have the numbers in front of me, but the data that we have received thus far does show that there was a dip in sales tax revenues, and that the bridge is likely a factor there. You know, those numbers for the past couple months will continue to come in, and John Stroud will continue to report those. But we are certainly expecting to see an uptick now with the bridge back open. Unfortunately, several of the nearby businesses are closed right now for renovation or for their regular little fall break.
Okay.
So I expect things to be up and running and exciting again come Monday.
David, was the Aspen Times doing any special coverage of this? Have you guys cranked any maybe numbers that the city actually had to pay the contractor for getting done early?
No, you know, we since we are sister papers with the Glenwood paper, it was really nice to have their coverage. You know, we really kept an eye on the Independence Pass issue because that was the big, you know, thing for us, people trying to get up and over, or
totally.
The trucks, you know, at the very beginning, kind of looking at the traffic volume and the carpooling. So for us, it was really kind of keeping track of where CDOT was with the pass and being able to keep it open. So I think, you know, having the coverage and having another paper right there, it was really beneficial for us. And if you haven't already, I highly recommend going and reading John Stroud's story about the first person who drove across the bridge in the car.
Really nice story.
It's a good little feature. It was a nice story.
Carla Jean, it's like, to me, you compared it to the Gilmore Girls, but I'm like, what? It's like if Glenwood Springs ever won a Super Bowl. It's like the whole town's out with like flags and cheer, and we like, you know, a parade.
Well, in the worst case scenario, really didn't happen, right? In the sense that there was a lot of commuters and sitting in traffic for long periods of time, but nobody went ballistic necessarily, right?
Yeah.
And there weren't any accidents, I don't think, during construction, and they finished on time.
They finished 10 days early.
Well, yeah. There you go.
I think the initial part, though, CJ, and you probably saw this as well, is, you know, after that first week, and people really felt, okay, wait a minute, I really do have to change how this is going to be because it is going to be backed up almost. And we got lucky that there weren't any huge weather events, you know, no big snowstorms. That would have really messed with things. But don't you think, CJ, they didn't get to the drop that they wanted in traffic, but they got, almost into the 20%?
Yeah, they did. There was certainly a significant drop, but it was not close to what they had hoped for. And of course, the time people spent in traffic could have been eased had more people ceased to drive, you know, and then coulda, woulda, shoulda. We are really fortunate that regardless, things finished early. They did not lose any days of work. And of course, they had budgeted for that. As you mentioned, weather is certainly always a potential issue. But, yeah, we got that over with 10 full days early, and it's nice to see cars whizzing by at 25 miles an hour again.
Yeah.
CJ, as Brent said, no one went ballistic, but there was, I mean, like, meme after meme, video after video in the Roaring Fork Swap. Like, people did come together as the talking point on Facebook. Does anyone have any closing favorite, like, traffic memes that came out of this?
Oh, well, there was one woman who regularly posted videos to YouTube from her car stuck in traffic, and those are pretty humorous. I definitely recommend checking those out.
We're going to have to end on that. It's been a pleasure to have a live Valley Roundup with such a well-informed guest list today. My name is Allison Bechtesh from Aspen Public Radio, but joined in the studio with me are David Krause, editor of the Aspen Times, Brent Garner-Smith, editor and executive director of Aspen Journalism. Carla Jean Wheatley is live on the phone from Glenwood Springs. She's the features editor at the Glenwood Springs Post-Independent. You can get a rundown of links and more information on the stories we covered today on aspenpublicradio.org. Valley Roundup is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.